There's no free lunch when it comes to investing. But what about a podcast that delivers educational content on investing, financial planning, items of interest, and even the odd wacky topic? Welcome to the Free Lunch Podcast, hosted by Canvas Wealth. Free Lunch will bring listeners the team's vast knowledge and experience in dealing with uncertainty. Learn more and subscribe today at canvaswealth.ca.
Welcome back to the Free Lunch Podcast, today with Colin and Blair. Blair, nice to have you back.
Nice to be back.
It's good to see a new face here with me. Nobody else can see our faces, but we can see each other.
Yeah, they'll come later.
Yeah. Well, actually, we are going to be doing some video at some point, and the idea is that we'll be launching this on YouTube in the new year. And speaking of the new year, Blair, we're stepping into a brand new year. And it's a great time to pause, reflect, and reassess. Not because January holds some magical predictive power, but because clarity at the start of the year sets the tone for everything that follows. So for today's episode, we're almost doing like the 12 days of Christmas, but we're calling it, I don't know, the 12 steps of financial planning.
Yep.
Sounds about right?
That sounds right. It adds up, 12 and 12.
Yeah, that's right. Well, let's start with one. The step one is revisit your long-term vision. So a new year is that neutral reset point. It's a chance to go back to the big question of what am I actually trying to achieve with my money versus what was my rate of return last year, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So your life changes. You have things like, I don't know, but not necessarily in your case, Blair, in this one, but it says kids move out. Well, in our show notes, I should say. Well, both my kids moved out. So that was a big change in this last year. Which led to other goals. And yet often we let our financial plan sit untouched. And, you know, I guess we got a question like, what matters now? What changed last year? What stayed the same? And having that clarity can help anchor you when markets get noisy.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the mistake a lot of people make is they start the year thinking about performance instead of purpose, which is, you know, pretty easy to do. They'll say, well, markets were up last year, so maybe I should take on more risk, or the opposite if markets were down. But your goals shouldn't be anchored to what markets just did. They should be anchored to the life you're trying to build. When you start with purpose, the money decisions get a whole lot easier.
For sure. Yeah. And I find it's more markets were up last year, so should we take some off the table? You've had that question over the last couple of years, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's always that looking backwards instead of looking forwards.
Yeah. And anybody that did that at the end of the previous year, well, they missed out on a bunch of return, right?
Yep.
So, okay. Number two, are you still on the right side of risk? This is a big question because risk isn't permanently tattooed on your portfolio. Your risk need and your risk capacity tends to evolve as your life evolves. And it's the perfect time to ask yourself, self, does my portfolio still match the life I'm living today?
Yeah, exactly. And the challenge is that people tend to judge their willingness to take risks based on whether what the markets served up recently, like we just talked about. You know, if the last 12 months were smooth, then suddenly they feel a lot braver. If it was a bumpy last 12 months and suddenly they feel very conservative, that's that recency bias we talk a lot about.
Yeah.
So real risk tolerance comes from understanding, you know, your time horizon and your goals, not your emotions about your, you know, last year's headlines or some prediction that's coming up.
I'm going to make a prediction. When Greg has said this one many times over the years, when people are like, hey, what's going to happen to the markets? And the answer is always like, well, they're either going to go up unless they go down or maybe stay the same.
Yeah.
That's a prediction.
Yeah. I mean, it's, flip a coin.
It's a little humbling. You know, I was at a neighbor's house over the holidays for a Christmas party, or I should say a seasonal holiday party. You know, of course it comes up, what do you do? And we got into the stock market and this guy told me all about how he buys certain stocks for returns and I'm like, oh, what do you do for a living? Well, I'm in supply chain management. It's like, well, I don't know what that has to do with being qualified to pick stocks, but whatever.
Yeah. I mean, it's, those conversations are always a little tough, especially with people you don't really know very well.
Okay. Number three, cash flow and spending reset. So as we are in January, it's the beginning of the year. It's a fresh slate. It's also a financial fresh slate or clean slate. So it gives you time to review things like, well, how much are you spending? How much are you saving? Are there any big ticket purchases coming up this year or in a couple of years. That could be like tuition, renos, travel, or all of those things in our case. I've got to pay tuition. My wife is always talking to me about getting a new bathroom.
Yeah.
And we do like to travel periodically. So you got to start planning for those things.
Yeah. And this is where we talk about, still going back to what we talked about before, is those behavioral biases and really show up big time. So lifestyle creep is real. You get a raise or bonuses were good, or maybe you just had a busy year and spending rises without you noticing. That's hedonic adaptation.
Yeah. That's a mouthful.
It is. I pronounced it wrong, but
I think people got it.
Yeah. We adjust to new levels of comfort really quickly. The new year lets you break the cycle and ask, am I spending intentionally or did it just happen? And what we've seen over the last few years too is, you know, a cost of living increases, which add it with a lifestyle creep. Suddenly you're looking and it's like, man, the money in, money out.
Yeah. All of a sudden the $1.50 Polish sausage at Costco looks like a good deal for dinner.
Yeah.
Right. Did you know that included a drink?
I've been there for the dinner surprise or whatever. My wife will bring home poutine and all those healthy options. So
there's not a lot of healthy options at the Costco food mart. Like I think the menu is like pizza, fries, poutine, hot dogs, or Polish sausages.
Yeah. Everything that'll make you feel like crap later.
Yeah. But delicious at the time.
Yeah.
All right. Number four, tax optimization. So start early with that. So one of the best habits is to get into early tax planning. Get things like your TFSA and RRSP contributions done early in the year. You know, just because you make your RRSP contribution early in the year means that you could actually apply it to the previous year's tax return or a future year's tax return, right? As long as it's done in the first 60 days.
Yep.
So if you can, take advantage of that beautiful thing called compounding and don't wait until December to scramble.
Yeah. And people procrastinate taxes for the same reason, you know, you and I may procrastinate it. About going to the dentist, you know, we know it's important, but it feels uncomfortable. So, you know, there's uncertainty. You're afraid of the bad news. Loss aversion also plays in. You don't want to part with your cash for contributions because it feels like losing spending money today. Like we talked about that. It tastes good now, but I'm going to pay for it later. But the irony is, the earlier you contribute, the more money future you has. It's the ultimate gift for present you to future you.
Yeah, it's like being in the DeLorean, taking it back up to 88 miles an hour and stepping back in time, right?
Exactly.
Setting yourself up for the future. Okay, number five, estate and insurance checkup. So a big one that we're always asking people, like, do you have a will? When was it last reviewed? Who's your executor? Things like that, right? It's always amazing to me how many people either don't have a will or have one that hasn't been updated or reviewed in many years. So it's really important to do your estate planning. Make sure your will's up to date, your proper beneficiaries are named, you've got POAs and personal directives and all that stuff built into it.
Yeah, and there's a few reasons. You know, this is one of the topics, kind of like that we just talked about for taxes, that people avoid because it brings up morality.
Or mortality.
Mortality.
It's, well, morality too. But
Yeah. It's uncomfortable. And when someone feels uncomfortable, we push it off. And there's, I think there's also a certain, for certain people, it's like, well, I don't have a lot. I don't, you know, everything's going to go to so-and-so. And as we tell everybody, you know, we get up on our soapbox and, and so the will and the estate plan is the most important document you'll have.
Yeah.
You know, there's only one way to make sure that your wishes are met, and that's to write them down. And that's the same with a power of attorney or personal directive. You may think it's going to go to somebody, but if you don't have it written down, there's no way for you to make sure. So you want it written down, you want it done properly. I know there's some cost issues that we talk to people about where it's like, well, I don't want to spend a lot of money on a will. Yes, you do.
Yeah.
You know, spending $1,000 may seem like a lot now, but imagine, you know, it going to the wrong person, or, you know, you come out of a coma and find out that who you thought was looking after your finance isn't, and you've lost, you know, tens of thousands of dollars. So make sure it's done properly because, again, I'll restate it, it's the most important document you will have.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you heard it here. Okay. Number six, portfolio discipline after another surprising year. So I guess where this is going is every year is a surprise, right? I mean, there's lots of people that come out with their recommendations or their outlooks for the next year. And then we can always look back at those outlooks a year later and see that they're all bunk, right? But why would we expect them to be able to predict what will happen in the upcoming year, right?
Exactly. It's that old quote by the baseball great Yogi Berra. Predictions are hard, especially about the future.
Yeah. Don't get caught up in the surprise part. It's the just to have a disciplined investment plan. Disciplined investing wins. So this is the time of year to check in on your asset allocation, your factor exposure, if that's important to you, cost, tax efficiency, even things like asset location, which is one that doesn't always get as much attention as asset allocation, but you know, from a tax perspective, which assets should be in certain accounts, things like that.
And again, prediction is not a strategy. Last year had surprises. Next year we'll have surprises. The year after that, more surprises. Investors get into trouble when they think uncertainty is something to be solved rather than something to be accepted. So the beauty of evidence-based investing is that it removes that guesswork. You don't need to predict. You just need to stay disciplined.
Yeah, you know, I remember when I was in school and we had this prof, and I was in my 40s when I was in school. It wasn't high school. Yeah. It was grad studies, but regardless, we were talking about making decisions. And I said, you know, in our world, we make rules-based decisions. If your asset allocation goes out of whack, you don't really have to think about it. You just sell the thing that's up and buy the thing that's down, right? And they said, that's the silliest thing I've ever heard of. And I took great offense to that. I was like, what are you talking about? I mean, because anything I've learned when it comes to your portfolio is that you never really know what's going to happen. You only know what's happened, right? And if you don't make those trades in a rules-based way, you fall into your biases.
Well, yeah, exactly. And again, we deal with long-term relationships. So it's not about what was hot last month. It's about, hey, I want to make sure you get to retirement in 15 years.
Yeah, exactly right. Speaking of which, number 7 is planning for those major life transitions. So I feel really blessed, Blair, because we've worked with so many people over the years that we've helped them plan for their retirement. We've helped them enter their retirement, and we've helped people that are well into retirement, right? So retirement's a big thing. That's a big transition, but it's not the only one. There's also like selling a business. Maybe it's a downsizing a home or moving into some sort of assisted care, right? Maybe it's supporting adult children. I mean, each transition deserves some form of planning, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, and planning ahead reduces stress because it replaces guessing with preparing. Scenario planning, so running a best case, base case, and worst case gives people a sense of control. It's like turning the lights on in a dark room. The uncertainty doesn't disappear, but you're no longer afraid of what you can't see.
Do you ever get scared in the dark room? When you, like, in your basement, if you go down and all the lights are out, does it ever freak you out?
No.
No? Okay, well, that's good. Good for you.
Yes.
Recently, I was talking to my son about this because he lived in the basement. And remember one time he said, Dad, I thought I saw something. I was like, you're just imagining things. And then recently I went down there and I thought I saw something too. So I was like, so I shared this story with my wife and now she's scared to go down in the basement. But
Is that just where you're going to have the basement by yourself now?
Yeah, it's all a plan.
Yeah.
No. Number 8, let's not forget about business owners and corporate planning because that's super important. So if you are a business owner, you've got to decide, well, how much salary are you going to take versus dividends? How are you going to deal with your holding company, your operating company? How are you going to income split? Are you going to be able to use lifetime capital gains exemptions, family trusts, things like that? So this is not relevant to somebody who has like just T4 income that, you know, works at a job and has a salary and that's what they get. This is for people that own a business. There's some depth to the planning that's required.
Business owners, more than anyone, tend to take concentrated risk without realizing, you know, their business becomes a retirement plan, their investment plan, and their identity. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of eggs in one basket. And the start of the year is a great time to balance things out. So diversify personally so you don't rely on a single company, even if it's one you believe in deeply.
I would say even if you are I'll just call it out, like if you're, let's say you work in oil and gas, right? Not as many Calgarians do, right? So they work for an oil and gas company. They're paid from that oil and gas company. They're given stock in that oil and gas company. They have a maybe a purchase plan to purchase more stocks in that oil and gas company. In that case, the same thing is applied, right? Like we would say, hey, you need to diversify some of that.
Well, yeah. I mean, the big obvious example of one that happened, I guess, a little while ago, but was Enron.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how many employees were, they were all in.
Yeah.
You know, extra shares are being incentivized by their employer to, you know, your pension's with us,
yeah.
You got more stock, buy in. And then when everything went sideways, there's no pension.
Yeah. Yeah. What can go wrong?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Number nine, smart withdrawal strategies for retirees. I've been running into this one more and more recently as it relates to RIF withdrawals, you know, because as people come to understand when they're getting older is that when they do die, that RIF becomes income against their estate in the minute that they pass away, right? And so a big question has been around, like, should I be taking more out of my RIF than the minimum withdrawal, right? Should I be melting that down? What should the timing of my RIF withdrawal be? What kind of sequencing? Is there any clawbacks that I need to consider, like OAS that gets clawed back if you happen to make a lot of money in retirement? You know, those things all matter, right?
Yeah. You know, retirees, it's about the, and we call it, you know, that income layering
mm-hmm.
is, you know, taking the money out, understanding the tax now and the tax in the future. That's one thing. The other is that secrets of return risks. So, which really means here's a simple version. It's not just the average return that matters. It's the order of returns. So
yep.
if you have a bad year early in retirement, it hurts more than a bad year later, which is why having a plan, one that doesn't change based on emotions is absolutely critical, because then you can kind of focus on those, like we said, best case scenario,
mm-hmm.
base case scenario,
yeah.
and worst case scenario, and mm-hmm. and know what that's going to look like.
Like worst case scenario is you retire in, I don't know, March of 2009, when the stock market's down 50%.
Yep.
And you start to withdraw from your portfolio because you have to, because it's paying for your life, right?
Yep.
Versus somebody that retired in March of, I don't know, 2025. Stock market was a lot higher than it was in March of 2009. So yeah, so that sequence of returns can really come into play.
Yeah. And to go even farther and going back to something we talked about, imagine in that same timeline and worst case scenarios, if you're in a well-diversified portfolios that had, say, government bonds or mm-hmm. something that had not made money in the last few years before that, you know, you'll be a lot better off than all the hot credit default swaps.
Yeah. But hey, government bonds aren't sexy.
No, that's true.
All right. Number 10, review fees and advisor value. This one I think is really critical. We've had a few people referred to us recently. You know, they've given me their statements of things to analyze and I've gone through them, and it's a little shocking sometimes at some of the fees that are being charged out there. And then you start to question, okay, well, what value is that person getting from that relationship? So it's really important that you understand your fees, but you also understand what you're paying for. And I know Russell Investments puts out something called the value of advice every year. And it talks about, you know, that, let's call it a 1% fee. Well, what do you get for that? What does it cover, right? And a big part of it is behavior coaching, tax strategy, estate coordination, crisis navigation. I mean, those have nothing to do with picking the right stock or bond.
Yeah, and this is where we remind people that advisors often earn their entire fee in a single moment. The moment they stop a client from making a catastrophic emotional mistake, a panic sell, a big market timing error, a decision driver by fear, greed, instead of a plan. If all an advisor ever does is protect you from one big behavioral mistake every few years, the value is enormous. And
yeah.
you know, people ask me what I do for a living, and it's like a large part of our time is talking people out of things.
Yeah, it's just a form of problem solving. I know over the years when markets have been down, which they do go down regularly, you know, it's like, well, how did you help somebody? Well, we kept them invested. That's a big thing to do. And it's not always the easiest thing to do when every headline around you tells you how awful the world is. But I think number 11 will help with that, is that, you know, we would suggest that people build a simple 12-month action plan. It's no different if you work in a business or you own a business or you, I don't know, run a group in a business, you probably have a plan, right? Like usually there's a business plan in place. Why would our personal finances be any different? So we would say break your goals into, I don't know, quarterly steps so you can attack something every 3 months and it gives you direction and accountability.
People love progress, but you know, they hate being overwhelmed. So chunking goals into smaller pieces, like you said, like maybe quarterly, make goals actionable. And it's called implementation intention. And studies show it dramatically increases follow through. It's not about willpower. It's about structure.
Yeah, we met a guy years ago, a guy named Dr. Bandura. And he talked about proximal versus distal goals and how proximal goals are short goals that are achievable. And when you accomplish them, it just improves your self-efficacy. So there you go, Blair.
Yeah.
Little sociology, psychology for you.
I learned something.
All right. Number 12, emotional preparation for the year. Let's just face it. There will be headlines. There's headlines all around us all the time that just tell us how terrible everything is. And, you know, what we would tell people is just view it as noise. And don't let your behavior fall prey to those headlines because your behavior will matter far more than any single market event. It's not the headline or even the event. It's what you did as a result of that.
Yeah, I mean, volatility feels different when you're prepared for it. If you know ups and downs are part of the journey, you stop reacting emotionally to every bump in the road. A plan doesn't just guide financial decisions. It regulates emotional bias and decisions. And that's the real superpower of planning.
Well, and you heard it here first, right from our, what I will say, Director of Financial Planning at Canvas Wealth. Planning's important. So thanks for joining us today, Blair. Thanks for being on the episode. Appreciate that.
Thanks for having me.
And we hope that everybody enjoyed this episode. We hope to start 2026 off with a bang. We hope that, like everybody, that the market will be up 20 or 30%. But if it's not, we also hope that people have done the proper planning to accommodate whatever market returns are happening. And if you enjoyed this episode, please give us a like or a review or something, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, why not? Okay. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Free Lunch Podcast hosted by Canvas Wealth. To subscribe to this podcast to get more realistic insights on investing or to connect with one of our talented partners, please head on over to canvaswealth.ca. We'll see you next time on the Free Lunch Podcast.
Financial planning services are offered through Canvas Wealth. Portfolio management services are provided by Q Wealth Partners, a registered portfolio manager, investment fund manager, and exempt market dealer. Canvas is an owner and partner in the Q Wealth Partnership. The information discussed in this show, including any opinion, is based on various sources believed to be reliable, but subject to change. The opinions expressed in this show are opinions of the individuals, and they have not been approved by and are not necessarily those of Q Wealth as a firm. This is not legal, accounting, tax, or investment advice and should not be relied as such.